This is your tech news briefing for Wednesday, August 3rd. I'm Zoe Thomas for The Wall Street Journal. The CEO of SoftBank, Masayoshi Son, is a huge and well-known presence in startup investing. His first Vision Fund poured billions of dollars into tech companies, sometimes more than they asked for. But some of his aggressive bets turned out to be duds that cost investors big. So when it came time for Vision Fund 2, Sun said he would take a more restrained approach. That is until the market started to swing up. On today's show, our finance reporter Elliot Brown joins us to discuss how Sun's strategy changed and what that means now that the markets have turned down. That's after these headlines. The leaders of a Senate committee are proposing legislation that would put Bitcoin and Ether, the two largest cryptocurrencies, under the watch of the Commodities Futures Trading Commission. The CFTC, which regulates derivatives such as corn futures and interest rate swaps, would be tasked with overseeing the spot markets for digital commodities, a new asset class. Our Washington reporter Paul Kiernan says the choice of the CFTC over other financial regulators like the Securities and Exchange Commission will be welcomed by the industry.
The SEC has a much kind of stronger mission to protect small investors. What that means is the SEC's rules are a lot tougher and its enforcement apparatus is just bigger and better funded. So if you are the crypto industry, you probably want the CFTC because it's smaller. It also doesn't have a lot of the rules that you're going to need. And so it's going to write them. And that's going to give you an opportunity to, you know, potentially influence the process.
Uber says it doubled its revenue to over $8 billion last quarter. The jump was helped in part by higher ride prices caused by a year-long driver shortage. But Uber also ended the quarter with a record number of drivers and food delivery couriers. On an earnings call Tuesday, CEO Dara Khosrowshahi said the company had been introducing incentives to increase the supply of drivers and reduce surge pricing for riders.
The supply situation continues to improve. The number of new driver signups in the U.S. were up 76% on a year-on-year basis. So we have a very strong flow of new drivers who are signing up, coming on to earn. Over 70% of them have said that inflation and what they're seeing right now in terms of the cost of groceries, the cost of living, plays a part in that decision for them to come onto the platform.
Uber also delivered on a promise to investors, generating free cash flow of $382 million in the quarter. It's the first time the company has hit the goal from its underlying business and not from a one-time adjustment. Taiwan says the website of its presidential office was hit by an overseas cyber attack on Tuesday, shortly before U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi arrived in the country. The visit by Pelosi, the highest-ranking U.S. official to visit Taiwan in 25 years, has sparked anger from China and unspecified threats of retaliation. Cyber attacks aren't uncommon around times of high international political tension. India's telecom industry is pushing forward with 5G. On Monday, the country wrapped up its latest auction for the wireless spectrum. India's biggest telecom company, Reliance Group, which is backed by Google and Meta, got the lion's share. But WSJ Heard on the Street columnist Megha Mandavia says investing in India's 5G is still seen as a risky bet.
India is a very price-sensitive market, may not be ready to, you know, pay a premium pricing for 5G. And most of the use cases for which Indians use internet, like internet browsing or streaming videos or, you know, making short videos, 4G suffices. And India offers very, very cheap 4G services. So there is a bit of, you know, concern among the analysts that telecom companies may have, you know, spent more than they should have in this 5G spectrum sale.
You can hear more from Megha on this morning's edition of our sister podcast, What's News? And trading platform Robinhood says it's cutting 23% of its staff in its second round of layoffs this year. Together, the cuts account for more than 1,000 jobs. Robinhood boomed in popularity during the pandemic, but it's been dealing with mounting hurdles. The number of active users in the first quarter fell 25% from its peak last year, and the company's stock price has plunged nearly 50% this year. Meanwhile, Robinhood's crypto trading unit was dealt a $30 million fine on Tuesday for alleged violations of anti-money laundering and cybersecurity regulations. It was the first ever crypto-related enforcement action taken by New York State's top financial regulator. Robinhood says it's made significant progress in building out its legal, compliance, and cybersecurity programs. All right, coming up, the head of SoftBank promised to curb his aggressive investments into startups. And then, at the top of the market, changed his strategy. We'll discuss after the break.
I asked what kind of family she wanted. She said, a family like yours.
Learn more about adopting a teen at AdoptUSKids.org. You can't imagine the reward. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
SoftBank CEO Masayoshi Son was already a well-known tech investor in 2017 when he launched the $100 billion Vision Fund. It was the world's largest private investment fund, and it aggressively invested in startups. It became known for writing big checks, sometimes larger than what founders had even asked for. But a number of the companies it backed flopped, costing investors billions. And when it came time for Vision Fund 2, SoftBank had to go it alone, with only its own money, as well as a new strategy. Or so Masayoshi-san said. As losses are piling up for Vision Fund 2, it's clear some mistakes from the past may have been repeated. And we should note a SoftBank spokesperson said Sun declined to comment. Joining us now to discuss all of this is our reporter, Elliot Brown. Hi, Elliot. Thanks for being here.
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing great. I want to start with, you know, SoftBank and Masayoshi Son are known, you know, by a lot of people for Vision Fund 1, which invested in companies like WeWork. Vision Fund 2 has kind of a different approach. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, so Vision Fund 1 was this enormous pile of cash, this $100 billion fund, which was spread around startup land in this really sort of haphazard way where it went in many billion dollar chunks to companies like WeWork and actually a number of other complete failures that actually lost 100% of the money. So for Vision Fund 2, Masayoshi Son from SoftBank really wanted to retool and sort of was chastened by his lessons from WeWork. And at first, the mandate was, everything is going to be much more disciplined. We're going to be spending less money. We don't have outside money in this. So look for companies with profits or that are soon to get profits. We don't need to be as obsessive about giving them money to rapidly grow. We're just looking for good, solid companies that can soon spit out profits.
And did Vision Fund 2 kind of stick with that mandate, that mantra to be a little more restrained?
So it did for a little bit. And, you know, then you had the COVID-19 pandemic and it sort of stayed not doing too much. But then what happened is at the end of 2020 and the beginning of 2021, the stock market really just kind of went wild. And so Masa, as he's known, Masayoshi Son, the CEO of SoftBank, saw what was going on in the public markets and saw companies that he'd invested in, like DoorDash, just, you know, literally doubling on its first day on the stock market and just really exceeding enormous amounts of expectations. And so then he sort of opens the spigot and says, we're going to be investing a lot in startups again. And, you know, it's all systems go. And so then what happens in 2021 is SoftBank spends more than anyone had ever spent investing in startups for the year. $38 billion from the Vision Fund 2. And that happened to be the year that valuations really crested at kind of wacky levels.
Okay, so how did that change of strategy to being, you know, kind of less cautious to kind of going back in and rapidly investing? What has that meant for, you know, Vision Fund 2 and kind of what people inside SoftBank are feeling about it?
Well, at the sort of, you know, distinct level, it stands to lose SoftBank a lot of money. It's been writing down its publicly held positions, which are easy to write down. And it's soon to be writing down a lot of its private positions, which are where most of the money is. So people expect many billions of losses there. analysts do, certainly. And then for the investing staff, it made a lot of them feel sort of like they became salespeople, where their job was to find companies to take their money. And so they had a routinized sort of system where they had like a giant spreadsheet where they had to log who called which company and were they going to take SoftBank's money or not. And they ended up spending money much faster than I think a lot of them would have wanted, or if it were their own money. And in the end, that's going to really hurt SoftBank if valuations stay anywhere near where they are today.
I want to take a step back for a second because Masayoshi-san is pretty well known in the investing world. I mean, he certainly got this reputation for making these big bets on companies. Can you just tell us a little bit about kind of where he came from and how he became such an influential investor?
Yeah, he's this really fascinating figure in tech. So he started SoftBank in the 80s and then really rose to prominence in the 90s after building up an eclectic business. And he just bet huge on the internet. And it worked really well for a while. And it was one of the most valuable companies on earth. And he likes to say he was the richest man on earth for about 3 days. And then the stock market crashed and SoftBank stock went down 99%, as did his net worth. And so then more recently, he's known for he was an early investor right around that time in Alibaba, which has really been the financial spine of the company for the past 10 years or so. And then made a really smart bet on Vodafone's Japanese operations, which he bought in 2006 with a lot of debt. And it also has brought SoftBank many billions of dollars of profits. So, you know, those two things together have really allowed him to lose a lot of money in other investments.
Okay, so not that history is always, you know, a perfect indicator of what comes next, but can I tell us a little bit about, you know, how Masayoshi-san and the Vision Funds and SoftBank might deal with this situation of being kind of in the red so much right now?
Yeah, I mean, it's not a great position to be in for them. I mean, a lot of the companies that they were investing weren't like Alibaba in 2000. I mean, they were mature companies that were swallowing hundreds of millions of dollars. Their check into Alibaba was $20 million. So I think, you know, at least the expectation for the midterm and short term is just brace for more losses because these things take a while to sort of register. And then longer term, he's losing a lot of people around him. And given that they've been pivoting the company more toward investing in startups, that's not going to give them as much to sort of play with as things go forward. They're gradually getting out of things like Alibaba or certainly paring it back. So I don't think the future is terribly bright, certainly not compared with a year ago.
All right. That's our reporter, Elliot Brown. Thanks so much for joining us, Elliot.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
And that's it for today's Tech News Briefing. If you want more tech stories, check out our website, wsj.com. And if you like our show, please rate and review it. You can do that wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Zoe Thomas for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.